Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
And welcome back. I am Dave Cohen, along with Newell Norman, and we are continuing a series of candidate interviews ahead of Saturday's primary elections. We have invited candidates for mayor and sheriff in New Orleans elections that have polled 5% or more in the two most recently publicly released polls. Welcome back, Newell.
Dave, it's good to be here, and it's good to be joined by former superintendent of the NOPD, Michelle Woodfork. Thank you so much for coming this morning.
Also a candidate for Orleans Parish Sheriff and a veteran police officer. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We're glad you're here. For folks who are not familiar yet with you, and it'd be hard not to be in this community, but who is Michelle Woodfork?
Michelle Woodfork is a New Orleans girl, a native New Orleanian. Grew up in New Orleans East, where I still reside, and I raised my son there. I'm also a graduate of Southern University at New Orleans, where I received my bachelor and master's degree in criminal justice. And I am a 35-year law enforcement professional. I spent 33 years at the NOPD, and also I worked at the sheriff's office. That's actually where I began my career, under the leadership of Sheriff Charles Foti. And so I am proud of the body of work that I have as a law enforcement professional. And I think I'm the best candidate for sheriff.
Interesting. What years were you at the Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office?
I started there in 1989. I went through the academy in 1990, where I first got my peace officer standards and training certification, my post certification, and then went over to NOPD in 1991, and I went through the academy again, and I've kept my post certification up for the last 35 years.
So for those not familiar with you, can you describe your, as you made it through the ranks of the NOPD, what you were actually involved in?
Sure. I began my career in the 7th District, which is in New Orleans East. I was a patrolman there. And from there, I went on to the child abuse unit, where I investigated child abuse cases, whether physical, sexual, or neglect cases, and deaths of children under 10. I went on from there. I made sergeant. I was promoted to, took the test, was vetted, and made sergeant. Went on to work in a number of districts. And also our former chief of police, Ronald Surpass, chose me to head up our APR unit, which is the Alternative Police Response Unit, a unit that has grown, of course, since I started it. I think I started it with 4 computers and maybe 6 people. And it's a unit that takes calls over the phone, reports over the phone, so it can help with response times. And so I started that unit. I also went on to become a lieutenant in several districts. And then after 20 years, the department gave a captain's exam. and I was able to take the captain's exam, passed the captain's exam, was vetted and promoted to captain in 2021. And as a captain, I worked in the Management Services Bureau. As a captain in the Management Services Bureau, you're over HR, you're over budgeting and finance, you're over the academy, or several things, the carpenter shop, you're over the fleet. So all those things that help the department function, all the, you're buying all the equipment, those things like that. And so that's what I did as a captain. And in December of 2022, I was interviewed, vetted, by the city and the city administration, the mayor's office, and chosen as the interim superintendent when Sean Ferguson decided that he would retire.
What of in that training do you think uniquely qualifies you to be the next sheriff of Orleans Parish?
Well, many people don't know about all the training that the NOPD officers have. There are a number of trainings. Crisis intervention training, use of force training, management training, leadership training, media training. There's a number of trainings that you go through, and annual trainings too. We have annual in-service training that we do. And it helps us to keep up with any laws that have changed or any amendments to laws that we definitely have to pay attention to, anything like that changing. So I think what qualified me to be the interim superintendent is my experience, all the things that I did, you know, all the trainings that I had, all the management trainings that I had, all the trainings inside the department, and my experience. And once I interviewed, I was the one that was chosen because I had the most leadership experience, most management experience, and I did an excellent job at it. They gave me a task, and I did everything that I said. I authored and implemented a strategic plan that focused on reduction in violent crime, recruitment and retention, community engagement, and reforms inside the federal consent decree. And I did every one of those things. We got crime down 25%, tripled officer recruitment, moved us further along in the NOPD consent decree, and brought back programs that foster community engagement, whether it was the basketball summer league that we did. Also, we brought back officer friendly. We hadn't done that in years. Sent officers to DARE training. We hadn't done that in years. Implemented the cadet program, which is like a feeder into us having more officers come into the agency. So I think all those things made me a good leader, and it made us successful. Besides running a large agency of over 1,200 people with a budget of $166 million, and we were fiscally sound. And we were fiscally sound and able to get the things that we need as far as the budget is concerned. It's because we created relationships with the city council. I went and talked to Joe Geruso about our budget. I met with the CAO on our budget. So not just at budget time, but throughout the year, so that when budget time came, we had what we needed to make the agency work and to make sure that we were fiscally sound. I mean, I even had a couple of people say I was a little frugal. I was cheap. But I think not only do you take an oath to be the superintendent of police or be a law enforcement officer, you also take an oath to be a good steward of taxpayer dollars. And that was my part of my job, to make sure there wasn't any waste or overspending or buying things or funding things that we just absolutely did not need. We put our priorities first. We worked with the council, and that's why we were able to manage the budget that we did.
So what motivated you to qualify to run for sheriff?
What motivated me was watching what was going on inside this agency, or several things. But at the core of it, because I am a 35-year career law enforcement professional, public safety means everything to me. It was a calling all those years ago when I was a 20-year-old, that I wanted to continue to bring safety to my community, a community that I love, community that I live in, community that I will remain in until I am no more. But I also had great examples of what it was to serve. And, of course, that is a former Superintendent Warren G. Woodfork, my uncle, my father, who was a lifelong federal agent with the Drug Enforcement Administration. They taught me the importance of public safety. But what really made me want to run for this office is seeing the crisis that it was in. And that didn't start with a jailbreak, right? That did not start with May 16th. You saw what happened with the hotels for Mardi Gras. The OIG's report on overcharging the city, $260,000. Just a number of now the cyber attack is just one thing after the other, just put this agency more in crisis. And I thought at that time I was near retiring. And I'm like, what can I do to continue to help bring public safety to my city? And you know, it's very difficult to put yourself out to run for an elected office. And so after praying about it, talking to my family about it, talking to my son about it, and some other good friends who I really trust, it is the right thing to do. I am doing this to make sure my community is safe. And that's what prompted me to run for sheriff.
You had to be, to some level, disappointed, because you seem to be the heir apparent to be the next New Orleans police chief, to be the superintendent after serving as interim. The new process comes in. There's a search committee. The city council is now involved in approving. And you did not get named to be the next permanent police chief of the city of New Orleans. How much of that played a role in your decision when you started looking at the law enforcement landscape here to say, you know what, I couldn't do that, but I can do this. I can be sheriff and I can do a great job.
It really didn't, because when our current superintendent was named, which he's great, I continued to work for the department for another 6 months before I decided to retire. And I was fully vested at that time. I had 30 years and I did 3 years to make sure that I did my drop. And so I was finished. And a funny story that our current sheriff actually called me a month or two before I retired and wanted me to come to her office, and I did. And she wanted me to come and work for her. But after having more than one conversation for visiting her office at least twice, the leadership was lacking there. The priorities were lacking there. And so I couldn't do it. So it wasn't really on my mind. If I can't do this, I'm going to do that. It was actually watching a number of things that happened and wanting to ensure safety for all of New Orleans, which prompted me to run for sheriff.
We're talking with Michelle Woodfork. She wants to be the next sheriff for Orleans Parish. When we come back, we'll talk more about what the core responsibilities are at the sheriff's office and how she feels she can address those. We'll also, as we did last hour, talk about the immigration issue and whether or not as sheriff she would turn over undocumented illegal immigrants to the Immigration and Customs Enforcement. We'll talk about that and some allegations raised against her coming up as we continue our interview with Michelle Woodfork here on WWF.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
You open the fridge, there's nothing there. So what's it going to be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-thru burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams.
at least 20 grams of protein, no artificial flavors or colors, no chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
And we're talking with Michelle Woodfork this hour about why she wants to be the sheriff of Orleans Parish. She was the interim police chief under Mayor LaToya Cantrell at the time that allegations were raised that the mayor and one of Woodfork's officers were involved in an extramarital affair and allegedly committing payroll fraud amidst other allegations. Newell, this has to be an issue in this race.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to get your take on the conversation that you had with the mayor relative to reinstituting or bringing Jeffrey Vappe back on in his position, if you would.
Well, as you know, as superintendent, you serve at the pleasure of the mayor. And so they call on you to ask you to do different things. In this particular time, it was something that I did not agree with. And so we had a disagreement about reassigning him back to her executive protection team and also about exonerating him on a PIB case. And, you know, integrity is doing something when no one else knows about it and no one else is watching and knowing the consequences of that. And as you know, without getting into the woods too much, because there is a federal, you know, a current federal prosecution that is going on, I'm always going to do the right thing. Knowing now what I know, what was going to happen, I would still make the same decision because it was the right decision. It was the fair thing to do. It was the only way that I could look other officers in the face. I couldn't readily exonerate someone who I knew was in violation of two different violations and exonerate him and look into the faces of the other officers and give them and discipline them. Just wasn't right. It wasn't fair. And again, at the end of the day, I'm always going to do what's right, no matter what the political cost.
So the long and short of it is you told her no.
Absolutely no.
You did not exonerate him, but he did return to be her personal bodyguard after an initial suspension, correct?
Not my decision.
Whose decision was it?
She is the mayor. She was my boss. She is ultimately decided against what I suggested.
But she could not decide against your refusal to exonerate him.
Absolutely not. I signed it. I called her and some things were said and this is where we are.
There are also allegations. May as well get these out there while we're having a conversation about allegations. We just talked with Edwin Shorty Jr., who is one of your opponents in this race and wants to be sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
There is a current attack ad running that claims you were suspended six times under mm-hmm. four different police chiefs mm-hmm. during your tenure as an NOPD officer and moving up through the ranks, up to and including allegations of a violent confrontation with another officer, with vandalism and violence in those allegations. How do you respond to the claims that he just told us last hour are part of your record from Public Integrity? And he says they're not allegations, they're facts.
As a public servant, my record is public. He suggests that I was hiding it. There's no way for me to hide it. Anyone can go and do a public records request and get my record. What he doesn't want you to know is that one of those allegations were overturned. It was overturned. He's not going to say that. One of them was as simple as a car accident where I hit a parked car. He's not going to tell you that. So he's being disingenuous about it. And the most egregious lie that he's telling is that my disciplinary record stopped me from being the permanent superintendent. And that is an outright lie. I was vetted each and every time that I was promoted to sergeant, lieutenant, captain, and then ultimately the superintendent of police. And as far as my disciplinary record, you know, I'm like I said, it's public. I would never hide from it. And anybody is, it's public record for anybody to go and see. And discipline is supposed to change behavior. Well, I was disciplined. My behavior changed. And as you can see, if someone is interested in going get the full record and look at it, that from those moments on, I went on to become a sergeant, a lieutenant, a captain, and ultimately the superintendent of police. But more importantly, I was vetted each and every time. And that means vetting my disciplinary record, vetting my body, my entire body of work. And it did not stop me from rising through the ranks. And he wants to suggest that it was favoritism or nepotism of some sort. You have to take exams to be a sergeant, lieutenant, or a captain. There's a civil service exam you have to take. And then all the other things are considered before you're promoted. And like he says, I was disciplined under different police chiefs, but I was also promoted under four different police chiefs. And so I think he's being disingenuous, and it's an absolute untruth that's why I am not the permanent superintendent. Again, referring back to this federal indictment, if you really want to know the facts, read it, pay attention. When it comes to fruition, everyone will know.
Why do you think you did not get to become the police chief after you served as the interim?
I just said it. You know, I did everything that I set out to do, every goal I put out under my strategic plan. We were meeting those goals. We were bringing down crime 25%, tripling officer recruitment, and also being engaged in the community, bringing new technology, and also moving along in the federal consent decree. And knowing that the sheriff's office is under a federal consent decree and moving backwards, we did just the opposite. We moved forward. And now, you know, the NOPD is in the self-sustainment period, which shows the body of work, not just under my leadership, but under Mike Harrison, under Sean Ferguson, under myself, and then ultimately under Ann Kirkpatrick, that we moved this consent decree forward. It's over 450 paragraphs, or maybe a little bit more, you know, and so it's a serious undertaking. And the sheriff's office, they have 174 paragraphs that they have to put in reforms to make sure they get out of this consent decree. So actually working inside of an agency, knowing the importance of what every person is supposed to do to make sure this consent decree moves forward, I think is very important in the person that is going to lead the sheriff's department from here on out.
So just to make sure we understand, so you believe that your refusal to exonerate Jeffrey Vapi ultimately led to the mayor not wanting you to continue as police chief?
I think it played a huge part in it. And I think all those things are come out in this federal investigation.
The incumbent sheriff has been adamantly opposed and has contested this issue in the consent decree hearings, going back and forth with the federal authorities relative to the mental health jail. Where do you stand on that issue?
You have to, as a law enforcement officer, you have to follow the law. And as far as the federal consent decree is concerned, about the mental and medical health, that's where they're failing. If you go and look at the latest report, they're failing when it comes to the mental health and medical health facility. And that is one thing that we have to press on, you know, and make sure that we're putting the reforms in place, that we're making sure that this new facility is built, because it has been mandated by a federal judge, by the consent decree, that it had to be built. And so in order to make sure that we're doing what we're supposed to do, you have to have the right medical staff there. First and foremost, you have to have the proper staffing. You have to hire at least 100 more deputies in order to make this facility work safely and work like it's supposed to do to serve the people that are being housed in this particular unit. And so that's where I'm at on it.
Let's talk about immigration.
Mm-hmm.
You see what's going on across the country mm-hmm. today. I mean, federal law enforcement officers are under assault. It seems to me that the safest way to transfer someone who is wanted or that ICE wants to handle, whether administratively or otherwise, through that process, to get the due process that everybody is screaming about, is to transfer that individual from the custody of the jail if there is an immigration detainer. Under the present construct of this office, I don't think that they're honoring those. What would you do?
I'm going to follow the law. It's what I've always done for the last 35 years, follow the law. The current sheriff wants to talk about the things that have been put in place by the federal consent decree, and I think that is a cop-out in order not to work with ICE. I work with my federal partners throughout my entire career, and I'll continue to work with them and follow the law. At the end of the day, you have to follow the law. You take an oath as a law enforcement officer to follow the law. Whether you agree, disagree, no matter how you feel personally on it, it is your job to enforce the law.
So let us be precise. Mm-hmm. These are civil detainers, right, mm-hmm. that are filed.
Right.
Will you honor them, and will you notify ICE that they can come and pick that individual up because they're getting out in a day or two or whatever? And it seems that's what a lot of folks are opposed to. What would you do?
I would follow it. I would have to honor those things. I would work with my federal partners, work with ICE to make sure that it's done. I don't think we have a choice. I think it was necessary, even though it's a civil detainer. It's still working with our federal partners, which we always do, to make sure that we're helping them get done what they need to get done also.
Would you agree that this is the safest course of action to transfer these individuals to ICE, you know, so that ICE isn't compelled to go out there and go to their home, go here, go there, or otherwise?
I think it is absolutely safe because going out into the community looking for someone at their job or in a home, it is always a safety issue, you know, that someone may be hurt, whether it's one of the federal ICE agents are getting hurt, or police that's with them, or the marshal's office that's with them, that's working with them, may get hurt. So I think it's the safest thing to do is from transporting them from one law enforcement agency to another.
I mean, you actually did that, right?
Absolutely.
As a law enforcement officer. So you understand the intricacies of the level of danger that's created not only to the individual, but to the community at large when we have to run that type of operation.
Absolutely, because it's so often that when there is an incident where someone is resisting or the law enforcement has to chase someone or whatever, an innocent person is always hurt or, you know, on the subject of being hurt in those situations. So I think we have to do what's best for the community. We also have to do follow the law. You know, we absolutely have to continue to work with our federal partners, follow the law, and do it the safest way that we possibly can.
The difference between being sheriff and being superintendent of New Orleans Police is it's an elected official. It's an elected position, and politics enter all elections, mm-hmm. even if it's for a law enforcement position. There will be some heat if you take that position that, yes, we're turning undocumented immigrants over to the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, because New Orleans has been, in recent history, a sanctuary city. And part of that sanctuary city status was that there was resistance to turn over illegals from the local jail to federal authorities. How will you deal with that heat that you catch over that as a politician, if elected?
Again, and Newell, you'll understand this, sometimes you have to make tough decisions. And the tough decision, it won't be that tough a decision if you're true to your oath. When you take an oath of office, you say, I am going to follow the law. I'm going to work with my federal partners. I'm going to work with my state partners. I'm going to work with my local partners in law enforcement. And you make the tough decisions and you do the hard job. If you're true to the office, you're going to do what's best for the people of this city.
We're talking with Michelle Woodfork. She wants to be the next sheriff. She's leading in the polls now. We'll talk to her after this about if she thinks she can win this election without a runoff in the primary. We'll also talk about, as we have with the other candidates, what is the right size for the jail? How many inmates should be there? It's a smaller jail than it's been historically, but larger than it was just in recent history. And we'll also talk about The Escape after this with Michelle Woodfork. Last hour we talked.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
You walk in tired and hungry, one bad dinner away from losing it. You don't like to cook. You don't want more takeout. You just want something good. That's why there's Dish by Blue Apron. Pre-made meals with at least 20 grams of protein and no artificial flavors or colors, from fridge to fork in 5 minutes or less. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
With Edwin Shorty, next hour, we'll talk with the current sheriff, Susan Hudson. This hour, Michelle Woodfork is in studio with us here at WWL. And Newell, one of the things I know you have been very interested to find out from each candidate is how big should the jail be in New Orleans?
Yeah. Have you looked at that? And what do you think the number should be?
I have. And when this jail was built, it was built to house about 800 or 900 people. We're at like 1,400, 1,500 right now. So I think it has to be a concerted effort to decrease jail population. And how do you do that? You have to collaborate with your criminal justice stakeholders. And I'm talking about the DA's office, the courts, the clerk, the police department, in order to see how we can decrease that population through maybe possibly giving summonses to those low-level, nonviolent criminals that brings people out of the jail. Diversion programs can be used also to decrease that population. I don't believe that we should be building a bigger jail, but more importantly, when people are convicted, because currently the jail houses those who haven't been convicted yet, haven't had their day in court. And so once those people are convicted, they, in a timely manner, should be transferred to the Department of Correction and get those folks out of there. And even if they haven't been sentenced, you know, if they've been convicted and not sentenced, there's still a way to do that. Maybe transport them back when it's time to sentence them, or do it via a monitor. You know, they don't have to actually bring the come in and be sentenced. They can do it through a video call, you know, get their sentence that way. That'll continue to bring down our jail population. And I think we should do it that way instead of building a bigger jail.
How far do you want to bring it down? Because Sheriff Hudson had initially said she only wanted 500 inmates. Clearly, that has not been something that has been achievable. Edwin Shorty says he wants to actually increase the jail population by bringing in more state and federal inmates to generate revenue for the sheriff's office. to do the things that the sheriff's office cannot afford to do now, particularly in light of the recent failure of the millage. So where is that correct number? Do you have an actual number in mind for how many inmates should be housed?
Again, it was built for about 800 or 900, and I don't think we should be surpassing that. So somewhere in there is where we should be. And I think nobody. This is a municipal jail. Nobody wants to build a bigger jail and put more and house more, whether it's federal or state prisons. This is a municipal jail. The people that are supposed to be housed in this jail are those who are awaiting their trial, their day in court. We shouldn't be housing state prisoners and federal prisoners. I think that is a bad idea to do that in this municipality.
So where does the money you need come from? If the millage, the voters did not have the appetite to approve it, and you don't have additional revenue coming in from state or federal, I mean, there's no doubt there's a financial crisis at the sheriff's office now. We saw that exposed by the recent escape with locks that aren't working, cameras that aren't being monitored, short staffing. Where do you get the money to make these improvements that clearly need to be made?
I think the money is there inside the agency. I think it's just the management of it. And also, of course, the civil side. People don't realize that there is revenue that comes from the civil side. 6% of the cars, the vehicles that are auctioned on the civil side, it goes into the sheriff's budget. 3% from the properties that are auctioned off, it goes to the sheriff's office. I think the sheriff's office has to collaborate with the city council on the budget. And the way to do that is to create a multi-year agreement between the sheriff's office and the council on how they're going to fund the sheriff's office. And the way to do that is to be transparent. Be transparent about every dollar and dime that goes inside the office. They have to tell the city this. They should see, and this is before budget time, they should be having quarterly meetings saying this is how much revenue we got in so that the city council can properly fund this office. It's going to take the sheriff to be a bridge. You know, you're going to have to build that bridge between the council and the sheriff's office to make this work, because this is the only parish out of all the 64 parishes where the governance is different as far as the sheriff's office and the council goes. And so the sheriff actually runs the jail, but the city funds the jail. And that's where the rift is been for years now. And so we're going to have to come together, the sheriff and the council, come up with a multi-year agreement and agree on how we're going to fund this agency. If the city council has a proper knowledge of what needs to be done, what improvements need to be made, what salaries need to be increased, what training needs to be given, all the improvements that need to be done. If they know that and know exactly how much money that the sheriff's office has, and I'm talking about from the civil side and any other revenues that they're getting, maybe from the state or the federal government, they can make a better determination on how to fund this agency, and we won't be asking taxpayers for more money. Again, as the sheriff, when you take an oath, you also not just it's not your job is definitely the care, custody, and control of the jail, but it is to be a good steward of taxpayer dollars, and people need to know where every dime and dollar is spent, even getting into the brass system. You know, both of my opponents, when we weren't on radio or TV, both said they wouldn't use the brass system. I did. But of course, when we were on TV during the debates, they both said, yes, they would use the brass system. You know, it's a transparent model. You can see exactly what contractors are being accepted, who's a part of the system, and how much money is being spent. And people need to know where their tax dollars are going.
Let me ask you this. You don't see a connection between the falling crime rates and the fact that we have selectively incapacitated more impact criminals?
I absolutely do. There is
because there is an upside to having 1,400 inmates. I understand you're in overcrowded conditions, but
right.
That it's not by accident that the crime rate's falling. And I mean, I think the big challenge too, and I'd love to hear how you're going to address this. The clearance rates of the NOPD have almost doubled in some of the violent, crimes of violence categories.
Absolutely.
I mean, if those people are typically not going to make bond. Their bonds are going to be too high, and that's what the public wants. So how do you manage that in trying to work back towards 800 or 900?
Again, putting in invested in those diversion programs.
Yeah, but diversion's not going to work on a crime of violence. You know that. I mean,
that'll get your lower level criminals.
Yeah, but the makeup of the jail right now is predominantly violent offenders, right?
No, it's not. There are a lot of people in there who just can't afford bail or bond to get out of jail, or don't have the resources that they need. And that's why the recidivism rate is so high. They keep coming back into the jail. And, I heard my opponent talking about programs, they're good, but that's not what you need to be focusing on. You absolutely have to be focusing on mental health care, substance abuse, focusing.
I get all of that as it relates to the constitutional protections that are afforded to an inmate.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is the core mission of the jail,
right,
in holding of pretrial detainees is, when we talk about the care and custody mm-hmm. of it, it's what's required by constitutional standards. Mm-hmm. You don't want to have constitutional deprivation there, and control of the inmates. Mm-hmm. But that's going to consume a lot of the budget. Mm-hmm. And there's a pressure. If NOPD is clearing 90% of its homicides, right now there's over 100 homicides in the city.
Mm-hmm.
That's another 90 inmates.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that homicides alone in the throughput through the criminal justice system is at a minimum of about 2 years. So, and if we have that same experience, we're adding another 90 inmates, another 90 inmates, because they're not getting out. There's a lot of those are no bond or a real high bond.
And a way to do that is to collaborate with your criminal justice partners, with the DA's office, with the clerk's office, with
the throughput. I get it. We haven't been very successful.
Well, let me say this. It needs a change, obviously. Yeah. You have to talk about, everyone has to sit at the table and own what it is their job is to make the criminal justice system work more efficiently. And so that is my goal, to have a seat at the table with the judges, with the DA's office, and, whatever their deficiencies is in making these cases move forward, so we can transport people to the Department of Corrections and not keep them in there. That's a part of bringing down the jail population too. So I think that's a big part of it. It's going to take everybody doing a better job, and that's courts, that's the DA's office, that's the sheriff's department, the clerk's office, and also the NOPD doing a better job, each of us, at what we're supposed to do inside the criminal justice system in order to bring that population down.
Yeah, I mean, a big challenge, though, and we had the same challenge when I was sheriff.
Right.
I mean, there's no magic solution.
Right.
There's no special fairy dust that you can throw on this and have it go away. But at 90, if you have a 90% clearance rate on homicides, and let's just assume that there's 100 a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
That would be a reduction, actually, in this city, right? If you if you did that for a number of years, and you would be increasing the clearance rate. At a 900-bed jail, mm-hmm. that's 10% of your jail population mm-hmm. every year that's incarcerated for one crime of violence.
Right.
Just one.
Listen, I didn't say it could happen overnight.
Yeah.
But I think it is doable if we start doing things differently. We have to. I've been looking at it, studying it, trying to figure out how can you decrease this jail population. And the criminal justice system really has to be hitting on all cylinders in order to do that. We all have to do a better job. And I think my partners in the criminal justice system, you see it with the judge that had all these cases that hadn't been adjudicated for over 2 years or something. That stops up the criminal justice system. That stops the process. That keeps people inside the jail facility for a longer amount of time, because the wheels of justice aren't efficient. They're not moving the way they're supposed to. So I think that is going to be a huge effort. You know, has it been talked about before? But have we executed? I don't believe in just making plans. I believe in executing those plans and getting results. And then also being transparent and having the public hold me accountable for the things that I said I was going to do. And if I get it wrong, say it. I got this wrong, but this is what we're going to do. I like to be proactive about things, proactive about getting things done. And I think that is a way, that is definitely a way of decreasing our jail population.
So you would be a catalyst as a sheriff to try and improve the overall criminal justice system in the city, not just at the jail.
Absolutely. I think I have already started on that. I have been in law enforcement a very long time and have those relationships with the DA's office, have those relationship with a lot of the court, the judges in court, and the clerk's office, and definitely with the NOPD. I think if we work together and everybody does their part in this criminal justice system, it definitely could work. It definitely could bring down the jail population, and it could be, justice could be more efficient here in the city.
Got less than 2 minutes left with Michelle Woodfork. Want to give you the opportunity to address the recent escape of 10 inmates, the unprecedented escape of 10 inmates, a convicted killer still at large, and anything else you want to share with our audience that you would do differently as sheriff of Orleans Parish.
Look, the people have lost trust and confidence in this agency and in the leadership because of poor management hires, the continued violence and introduction of contraband into the jail. And they need a leader, a proven leader. And I have proven myself to be that law enforcement leader as the interim superintendent. Of course, put out a plan and executed on that plan. Got crime down 25%, violent crime down 25%, brought overall crime down 23% because we put a plan in place and we executed on it. And that's the same thing that I'm going to do when I'm elected as the next sheriff. I feel very confident about my knowledge, skills, and ability, my experience, and I am the most qualified candidate. The only one that's ran a large law enforcement agency of over 1,200 people, a budget of $166 million, and it was fiscally sound. We got results, and that's what I'll do as the next sheriff.
She's Michelle Woodfork. He's Newell Norman. I'm Dave Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us. We enjoyed this hour with
you.
Thank you.
Next
hour, Susan Hudson, the current sheriff, is here on WWL.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.